This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. We know one thing's for sure. The last day of the National Hockey League season will be tonight. Game 7 from Boston Bruins and the Blues for all the marbles. First Game 7 since 2011, also involving the Boston Bruins. The last two Game 7s have been won by the road team in 09 by the Penguins and in 2011 by Boston. Will the Blues be able to keep the streak alive, or will Boston win the cup? All these questions will be answered momentarily by the great Dan Rosen from NHL.com as he joins us from Boston. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to this, man. I mean, yeah. This has been a fun series. It's been a fun playoffs. There's been controversy. There have been upsets, and you've got the underdog in the Blues, worst team in the National Hockey League on January 3rd, trying to make this miracle run, and the Boston Bruins, who had a tremendous regular season, just obscured by the fact they were in the same division as the Lightning, but are probably obviously the clear-cut favorite here, trying to take advantage of surviving in Game 6. What's the vibe there in Boston as you get ready for this game tonight?
Well, everything you just said is so true. It has been a great series. It's been the series I think so many of us expected to get. You know, these were two teams coming into this series playing really good, obviously, but so even, so matched up so well against each other, both physical, both have good goaltending, elite centers who were up for the Selke Trophy, and Ryan O'Reilly for the Blues and Patrice Bergeron for the Bruins. And so much of it has played out in the first six games of this series. It's been even. The difference in this series, if you want to look at it, has been the power play, which, you know, the Bruins have 7 power play goals and the Blues only have 1, but it hasn't made a difference in the Bruins winning the Stanley Cup already, because here we are in Game 7, and the vibe is terrific. Everybody's pumped up, excited. The city of Boston is revved up. They know what this is all about. You know, they've had their share of championships of late, so they know what it is, and there's a demand here to keep winning. But, you know, Donnie, like, it, you know, just being around the players today, being around the coaches, there's a calm about them. But you know, and they've even talked about, they're not hiding from it, there's a nervousness about this too. I mean, this is the game of their lives. This is, you know, save for Tuukka didn't even play in 2011. Save
right.
for Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, and David Krejci from the Bruins, nobody else has experienced the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final that's in this. And none of the players in this have experienced the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final at home. Which is what the Bruins have, first time in history. So there's an excitement, there's a nervousness, there's an eagerness. They wanted to play it yesterday.
Right.
All those things. So it should be a great night in Boston. It's Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. 17th time in history. It's awesome.
You know, it's been an unpredictable series, but if there's been one thing that has been predictable is the Blues' struggles on the power play.
Yeah.
I think it's less of an issue tonight if you follow my logic. I think it killed them at home. You know, you got the building's electric, you get an early power play, you don't score, you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Maybe on the road, you know, they don't have to worry about the crowd, right? The crowd will not turn on them like it does at home and asking, you know, screaming for you to shoot the puck and being disappointed when you don't score. I'm just wondering if now that it's for all the marbles tonight, you can kind of start from zero and maybe this kind of helps their power play, which has really been a major problem for them this entire series.
Yeah, 1-for-18 on the power play in the series. They did have 12 shots on goal in Game 6, but they were 0-for-4. And they're all from the outside. There's nothing, no great chances, you know, that are coming on the power play for the Blues. And I see your logic. I think it makes sense. You know, there's this whole feeling of, you know, less pressure on the road. You know, you're not playing to entertain and all that.
Right.
I do wonder if in a Game 7 all that gets thrown out because the cup's in the building. You know, I mean, everybody knows what we're playing for here. There is no tomorrow, all those cliches, right? But I see your logic on the power play. Craig Berube said this morning that they've made some tweaks on the power play. They're going to try a few new different things on the power play, see if they can get them going at all. But here's my feeling on it. It doesn't matter if they're good, if they're disciplined and they're good on the PK. If the Blues keep this an even strength game, that sways it in their favor, in my opinion, or at least evens things out. The teams are 13-13 in even strength goals in this series. It's 7-1, like I said, in power play goals. So there's your difference. But if they're disciplined and they don't put the Bruins on the power play, then I don't think it really matters what their power play does. But if the Bruins get on the power play and they get a power play goal, Now the Blues are under pressure in all different scenarios, especially their power play, because now the power play becomes a big reason why they lose or a big reason why they can't come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's where the pressure comes in. If they're disciplined and their PK is good, if they go on it, then it's fine. So if they have a problem on the PK, then they're in trouble.
All right, what does it mean to have Grizzlick return, and how much of an impact can he have after missing all that time?
Well, I think he can have an impact. He's fresh, number one. You know, that's number one. Connor Clifton has not been playing all that many minutes, hasn't been playing well. He has actually been in the box a few times in this series, too. The moment is big for Connor Clifton. This is a rookie he's never been around. Matt Grizzlick, the moment's big for him, too, but at least he's got some games. You know, I mean, he's got a little feel. He's a hometown boy. He literally, like, grew up in TD Garden. His dad's on, you know, on the crew at TD Garden. He's worked in the building for years on the Bull Gang, the team that, you know, turns it over from the ice to the court and all the other concerts and all that. So it's a huge moment for him. But he's also really good at going back and getting pucks and transporting them and moving them quickly. And that's what you have to do against the Blues. They will come at you. They're gonna put it in his corner when he's on the ice, and they're gonna try to hit him. But Grizzlick, if he's on his game, he gets to it quick and he moves it quick. And that's a way to break the forecheck for the Blues. And if you can do that, that puts the Bruins in a much, much greater advantage. So he's another guy who's good at breaking down a forecheck. He's better at it than Connor Clifton, and I think that's a big reason why he's going in.
All right, how the game is going to be officiated, I think, always is a major factor, but especially in this series. Blues want to play physical. Obviously, if it's going to be a sensitivity issue calling, that probably works to the advantage of Boston. Letting them play, I think, works to the advantage of St. Louis. What's your gut tell you on how it might be called tonight?
Oh, I think it's going to be physical. I think there'll be a little bit letting go, but they're going to. I have a feeling they're going to call this tight. I don't think they want anything to get out of hand, and I don't think the officials want a missed call or anything to be a deciding outcome of this game. So I think it's going to be called tight. I've heard some things where people saying, well, the Blues, they're physical, there's no tomorrow, don't worry about a suspension, you know, go out and make your hits and all that. And that's all well and good if it's within the lines, right? Mm-hmm. If it's in the boundaries of the rule. But if they toe that line too aggressively or potentially go over it, now you're looking at not just maybe a 2-minute power play, but a 5-minute power play. And I take you back, Donnie, and I don't think you want me to remind you of this. Steve Bernier, right?
Right.
Comes out 2012, game 6, Devils just won at home, forced a game 6 back in LA, comes out, blasts Rob Scuderi, got all that energy, 5-minute power play for the Kings. I think it was 3 goals, game over.
That's it. That was over. Yeah. Then the comeback was over. Now, the combination, from what I'm seeing, is Gord Dwyer and Chris Rooney. They've teamed up before. A combined 10-3 are the St. Louis Blues with this combination. Boston is 7-5 in this combination. So maybe that, but you're telling me that maybe it'll be tighter. So the history says these two officials might let some things go, which works to the Blues. It seems like when the Blues out-hit their opponent, they saw it with San Jose, they wore the Sharks down. When they've won against Boston, they've out-hit them, but more hitting could mean more penalties. And that's the one thing the Bruins cannot afford to have happen. So how much do you look into the history in this postseason with these officials favoring St. Louis as being a factor tonight?
Well, I don't know. I guess it could be a factor. I haven't quite thought about it in that sense. I never look at the officials and the team's records with the officials. I really don't. But you're right. I mean, I guess these two officials, you know, have let things go a little bit. But it's just, to me, even if they are letting them play a little bit, They can't ignore hits like the one Sundqvist made on Grizzlick,
right,
or the one that Shen, you know, made on Nordstrom, you know, or Barbashev, who didn't get a penalty for his hit on Johansson but got suspended for it. You can't ignore it. If you see it, they got to call it, and that's where I think the Blues are, you know, the team, I guess, that would be more in danger of going over the line just because of their style of play. The Bruins are physical, too. They play that way. But they check with their legs a lot, whereas the Blues check with their bodies a lot more. And they just need to play their game. But when they've played their game and they've been under control in playing their game, they've been really good. Just play that way. You know, don't go over the line, because then you're putting it in the hands of the official. And maybe he calls it and maybe he doesn't. But if you go over the line, you're putting it in the hands of the official, and now you're potentially putting the Bruins on the power play. Their power play is 7-for-23 in the series. I wouldn't want to put them on the power play.
Yeah, it's been the best power play throughout the playoffs as well. They did have a hiccup, I think, between the Columbus series and the Carolina series of like a 3-for-19, but still overall, they have just been the most consistent power play, dangerous. And also, do you find anything to the fact that when this top line scores, they win? And as deep as they can be, it just seems if they can shut down Boston's first line, their percentages of winning go through the roof.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And the Bruins' first line has not been, you know, it hasn't really produced a lot at 5-on-5. A lot of those points have come on the power play. Pasternak had, I believe, a 5-on-5 goal, you know, in game 6. But, I mean, a lot of those points have come on the power play. That to me, Donnie, is like a fear if I'm the Blues. Even though they don't want to look at it that way. It's just like, how are these guys really going to continue to get shut down in almost every way, 5-on-5? You know, like, this is the best line in hockey, in my opinion. So they might have, and these are big game players. Bergeron, you know, is a big game player. Marchand's a big game player. If I'm a Blues fan, I'd be a little worried that those guys are going to have a big game tonight.
Yeah, that's the dangerous thing. St. Louis and Boston tonight, game 7. Big topic really throughout these playoffs has been the officiating, the calls that have been missed, and you're really in tune with the National Hockey League. How much of this is going to be addressed in the offseason? Expanding replay, being more scrutiny on the officials. Do you see any kind of statement made by this league after all the controversy we've seen in the postseason to kind of appease those fans and try to do something about that, a la the NFL after what happened with the Saints and the Rams?
Well, I don't think they're going to they're going to expand video review. What way they do it, I don't know yet. I know the competition committee, which is made up of members of the players and coaches and GMs and the other executives, they met yesterday and they did come out and say they will make recommendations for expanded video review and also tweaks, changes to the coaches' challenge. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So there's your answer. Like, my opinion, I think that hand pass that was missed in the Sharks-Blues series, to me, that's something that gets in the new line of video review of what they do, that'll get reviewed. The puck that went off the netting in the Bruins-Columbus series that Artemi Panarin scored on after, like, either it's a rule change or that'll get, you know, that'll be allowed to be reviewed, I think, at some point. A call comes from the situation room saying, hold on, we've got to take a look at this. This might have gone off the netting. Or hold on, we got to take a look at this. This might be a hand pass. You know, they'll call down. Like you see the NBA, right? So the officials go and confer, but they'll talk to the people in Toronto. So I think there'll be some of that. I don't think they're going to review penalties.
All right, that's the good thing. I do not want to see that happen.
I don't think you can. I think you open a box right there.
Well, you can. I mean, listen, you say you don't think you can. I agree with you.
Where do you go with it?
But that doesn't mean that they will, right? I mean, you know, that's the scary thing.
I don't think they will. I really don't. How deep do you dive through this into video review? When you start a reviewing plays that might have been a penalty, you know, that, or maybe it wasn't a penalty. To me, that's a slippery slope. It's the game is called on the ice. If there's a blatant play that is in the rule books that the play should stop because this happened, like a hand pass or a puck off the netting,
right,
and the official don't see it, somebody in a situation room in Toronto does, you go to review. But, I mean, you can't review for, hooking. You can't review for a tripping. And I know that, like, the call on Tyler, you know, the one that wasn't called, the Bozak trip, right? I mean, on Nola Chari. It happened. Play through it. You know, I don't think you can go review that. I mean, if they don't score a goal there, nobody's talking about it.
I know. I don't think there's anything you can do about it either. It's just you get a little worried because, listen, that's a pass interference that they're now going to review in the NFL. So you do see overreaction at times. Now, what could be changed? Because the game is so quick. They've already added an extra referee, right? So they've addressed that over the last, you know, 15 years, understanding that the game is so quick to have it be on one person. Would you be open to allowing linesmen to make calls if they see something, rather than being asked about it after the fact? You know, let's say a linesman saw the trip. Would you be okay with him throwing his arm up as if he ended up being the only one that saw that?
No, but I would be open to, and I don't know if this is where they go, I'd be open to them putting a third referee upstairs.
Okay.
Who has a different perspective, a different view, but he has constant and immediate communication through a headset into the ear, into an earpiece or something like that with the referees, not the linesmen, the referees, right? Mm-hmm. And if he sees something, he says something. He's basically reffing the game, but not on skates. That is, he's allowing the referees on the ice to make the calls, but if he sees something, he says something, and they're, you know, they blow it away.
I like that.
That's just a different perspective. I'd be open to that. I don't know if that's something they're going to do. You know, then you're adding a third referee to every game. There's 1,271 games. There's going to be more once Seattle comes in, you know. So you're adding a third referee to all these games. You got to have to beef up your referee staff, all that stuff.
I mean, I would be okay to just do it in the postseason. You see Major League Baseball, they add referees, they add umpires in the postseason. Maybe it's something you only do in the playoffs, understanding that it just doesn't make sense to do it for every single game in the regular season. But, you know, in the playoffs, if they were to add that, would you be comfortable with that?
No, I think if you do it, you got to add it for the whole thing.
Okay.
Like, I know that Major League Baseball does it, but, you know, there's games in the regular season that make the difference between, and calls in the regular season make the difference between the team making it or missing it.
No,
in
you're
the playoffs.
Right.
So I think if you do it, you have to add it for every game that is played that matters, not preseason, but every game that's played that matters in the National Hockey League, if you do something like that. And again, I don't know that they're going to go to that, but that's something that I would be okay with. Not pulling a guy off the ice.
No.
But adding one into the press box.
I'm with that. Like, I mean, that's good use of technology there, where, why not having an eye in the sky kind of deal for help in those types of situations. And also, fans got to grow up too, Dan. I don't mean to be this harsh, but hey, this is life. It's not fair, okay? There's plenty of calls that are not going to go your way. And you know what? Credit to the Blues for surviving the hand pass. They come back and they win the series. Boston can win tonight and make the non-call from Game 5 completely obsolete. You know, so other than calls that happen in overtime in Game 7 where you can't go back, you know, the Blues stayed alive, found a way to advance. The same thing happened with the Boston Bruins if they happened to win tonight. Now, it didn't happen for Vegas, but nobody told Vegas to give up 4 goals on that 5-minute major,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Exactly. So, like, fine, you get the major. You don't agree with the call. Give up one. Fine. You can't give up that many goals at a major.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it doesn't matter. Like, kill the penalty.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There's options. There's ways. I mean, and listen, nobody ever talked about the fact that as bad as a non-call that was in Game 5, that was an awful goal by Rask. I mean, he could have made that save. You know, so
stop skating. Stop skating.
There's a lot of things to go into it besides the call. Yes, it was a bad non-call, but Boston didn't have to stop skating. Rask didn't have to give up a bad goal. They didn't have to, and there was still time, for them to be able, when they made it 2-1, there were still 6+ minutes for them to be able to tie the game. And I don't buy into the whole, they would have tied the game at 1 had it stayed 1-0. We don't
know
if DeBrus scores that goal. It's the fallacy of the predetermined outcome. We don't know. Blues play differently up 1-0 as opposed to up 2-0. So, I'm glad that we agree on that. It's just people get a little
absolutely.
Crazy.
People get nuts. It's fandom. They're called fans or fanatics. That's, you know, that they're passionate and it's great. And we love it. But, you know, we have the matter of we look at it through a different eye. We look at through we're objective. We look at it with perspective, and you know, our viewpoints can be different because we're not as engaged as fans are in the moment.
Couple of things before I let you go, and we'll read a couple of tweets too if you got a second.
Sure.
Some reports out of Canada that Kevin Hayes very impressed with the Philadelphia Flyers. You hearing anything about the possibility that they can get something done before July 1st?
Haven't heard a thing, but it doesn't surprise me in the sense of I believe Kevin wants to play on the East Coast. I think he wants, you know, that's, you know, home base for him is Boston, and he's used to it. He's played 5 years in New York, or almost 5 seasons in New York. I believe he wants to be on the East Coast. It doesn't surprise me. The one thing that I was curious about was the Alain Vigneault, element in the room there, because I wondered if Hayes wanted to go play for AV again. You know, I wondered if, you know, a bunch of the guys on the Rangers at that time that AV was done, if they were done with him.
Yeah.
So to speak. But, you know, I mean, it's a good organization. He's also got, AV himself has a little bit more perspective, having sat on the sidelines for a season. So it will be interesting. I mean, they traded for him, so they obviously chatted with his agent and had to have some indication that he'd be interested in signing there.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting, too. Good job by Philadelphia getting aggressive there. Talking to some people around the Rangers, we had a chance to have JD in studio when he was hired as the president. I was talking to Dave Maloney on MSG 150 last night. I was a guest of Alan Hahn and Bill Pito. Yeah. Rangers not being affected by what's happening with the Blues. I was kind of curious that when you see a team like St. Louis, worst team in the league on January 30th, be a win away from winning the Stanley Cup, does that change everybody's philosophy on how fast they want to go about things, right? Well, the Rangers are in the middle lane going 50 and a 55 saying, we're comfortable, our fans are comfortable with this rebuild. Oh, look at what St. Louis is doing. Let's put the blinker on. Let's get in the fast lane. Let's get to 65 here. And the feelings, the prevailing feeling seems to be no. Are you surprised by that? Do you believe that?
No, I think it's different. I think it's totally different. If you look at the Blues, they went out this offseason to build a Stanley Cup champion team. You know, they got Ryan O'Reilly. They traded for Ryan O'Reilly. They signed Bozak and Maroon and David Perron, filling out their offense. That's four forwards, four top nine forwards that they added on July 1st. They went out to change a little bit of their, you know, to change their mix because they wanted to go win the Stanley Cup. They were disappointed by not making the playoffs last year, but they have Petrangelo and Bomeister, Braden Schenn and Alex Steen. They've got a number of these guys, Colton Parayko, and they needed a shakeup of their mix, but this was still a team that felt it could go win the Cup this season by making those moves. The Rangers are a team that is not in that stage yet. They're in a rebuilding stage. They have a number of players who are hopefully going to graduate to the NHL next year and be impact players, if not next year, 2 years from now. I do expect them to make some moves this offseason to add in the offseason. I think they need a big right-handed top pair, if not top four defensemen. I think they want to add some scoring depth if they can. But they're still going to go with the rebuild for a little bit longer. Okay. Now, how long is too long? That's the question that I have, right? Like, how long, when does the patience run out?
Well, I think sooner than later. I think it comes down to, I'm seeing it now, you know, as somebody that's not on the inside with the Rangers, where I, you know, do a show and I'm on Twitter, that I think the fans now, oh, go out and get Panarin. Go out and get Carlson. Like, they were patient. All right, that was the year. All right, we didn't make the playoffs. They lucked out to get the second overall pick. They didn't necessarily have to get that high of a pick based on where they finished in the regular season. Everybody's in love with Kako, thinks that he might be the guy that's going to jump right in and participate this year. Elias Anderson, another year under his belt. Hedl, another year under his belt. Now you're seeing the fans start to think about going out for high-priced free agents. And if they don't, and I'm not sure they will, because it's got to be a good fit, you know, I think that I could see the fans being impatient next year if this team gets off to a slow start. So I think it could be happening now.
I think it could be, sure. I think that the part of the reason, and I see it too, is the team doesn't have any bad contracts on it right now. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they've gotten rid of players who, not on bad contracts, but long-term contracts, right? Like, it's not like Ryan McDonough was on a bad contract, but they got rid of him at the end of a contract, and Matt Zuccarello at the end of a contract, Hayes at the end, all this stuff. So they have almost a clean slate in terms of that. So I do think they should be aggressive and go, if they can go get a Panarin, go get a Panarin. This is a 27-year-old superstar. Go get him if you can get him. I wouldn't go to Erik Karlsson.
No.
I wouldn't do that. He's 29 years old. He's an old 29. He's coming off of an injury. Still a great player.
Yeah, but the two times he made a run, look at him in Ottawa for that Game 7 against Pittsburgh, and look what happened in San Jose.
Yeah, health has been a factor for him. Whereas I think a guy, if they can make a trade, would have to be a trade, but if they can get a Jacob Trouba, he's 25, he's a big right-handed shot, he's ready, I think, to be a top pair right-handed defenseman. He can play in all situations, and he fits more in the Rangers' age range of where they want to go. You know, so that's what you have to make a trade to do that. So who are you giving up? What are you giving up to do that? They do have the luxury of Winnipeg's pick, right? They still have that first round pick. So they have assets. They have options. And I think they have to fast forward it a little bit, the rebuild, I mean. I think where the Rangers have to be next season is competing for a playoff spot in March, late March, maybe even early April. If they're still in the mix at that point, that's a growth season for the Rangers, whether they make it or they don't. They're still in the mix. They're out of it for the last 2 years early. They have to be in the mix next year. And that, to me, keeps their fans engaged, keeps them interested, keeps them going, keeps them involved, and keeps them believing that they're on the right path.
Dan, have some fun tonight. I can't see how you won't.
Yeah, man.
That atmosphere is going to be tremendous. I envy you. I mean, I was very fortunate to cover a bunch of these back in 06 in Carolina, 07 in Anaheim, to be on the ice when the team won and interview the players and stuff. So I missed that.
Awesome.
And I look forward to talking to you down the road. I know you're going to be my third baseman for the August 3rd Mark Sasso 11th annual softball game. You're one of our best players. We appreciate that.
Do my best.
And you know what? Now that before I let you go, you buy this whole thing? Is Hall going to get traded by the Devils in the draft? Do you buy that he wants to test free agency, or where are you feeling that?
I think Taylor Hall I don't think he'll get traded. I don't think it makes sense for him to just jump at the first contract the Devils give him either.
Right.
Let's see where the team is, you know? Let's see what happens. Let's see who they get. Let's see what they do in free agency or trades before Taylor Hall commits the next potentially 8 years of his life, 9 years of his life to the New Jersey Devils. I think that's fair. He's earned that right. The Devils are going to push to sign him. I get it. It makes sense. Nico Hischier, Jack Hughes, potentially. These are good options for Taylor Hall for another, you know, next 8 years. But I think it makes sense for him to just wait it out and see what happens. Doesn't mean he's not going to re-sign. I don't think he'll get traded.
Enjoy it, buddy.
All right. Thanks,
Tony. All right. That's Dan Rosen, NHL.com. Does a great job not only with what's happening with the Stanley Cup playoffs, but the draft and free agency. So go to NHL.com. Always check out what Dan Rosen's doing. Always fun to talk to him. Well, it speaks for itself. It's Game 7, the best two words in sports. So we'll break it all down tomorrow. Either the Blues are winning the Cup, the Bruins are winning the Cup, one of the two. One thing we know for sure is the Cup is leaving the building with someone tonight. We'll be all over it with Game Misconduct tomorrow. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York. And worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.